Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. It's a Father's Day special, but an alternative Father's Day, because it was last Sunday. And it made me think all week, what about all the folks who don't have Abraham Clapper as a father like I did? Who put his arm around me when I was 14 years old and said, Robbie, I don't have any money to give you. When I die, you're going to have to pay for the funeral. But I do want you to know one thing. I love you very much. And if you need my pair of hands to help you move, to build something, to do, I'm there. But Robbie, go to school. Use your brain. Don't just use your arms and your muscle. Make something of yourself. And I remember saying, I'm the luckiest guy in the world because I got this guy as my dad. I'll take care of the rest of it. I went to the Catskill Mountains, worked as a busboy and a waiter and car hop and every other possible job while everybody else was going to school and goofing off. I was working. But it was the greatest thing in the world. So I was lucky, like many people, to have a dad. But there's a lot of people who don't. And I thought about Father's Day because I could think about Abraham Clapper. And he didn't get along with his father. My grandfather was not a good guy. But my dad made up for it. His bad relationship with his father made it really special, and he made sure it was great with me. I used to go to the job sites with him as a carpenter, and he'd look at people and go, and they'd say, oh, you brought your little helper here today. And my dad would put his arm around me and go, yep, this is my son, Robbie. God, it just made my heart just burst out of my chest. And then one day in the 90s, he called me and said he can't walk anymore because his knee was so bad. And I put my arm around him and I said, now it's my turn to help you. Yeah, and I took care of him. But what about the people who didn't have an Abraham Clapper? That's what today's show's about. So it made me think all week, where are the folks who made up for it, who found father figures? Well, in sports, Allen Iverson. You remember Allen Iverson. Crossover dribble, putting Tyronn Lue on the floor of the 2001 NBA championships against the Lakers, and then made the shot and stepped over Tyronn Lue. Yeah, that Allen Iverson, well, he didn't have a dad at home. He was the man of the house. Listen to the story. Brent Musburger can't say it enough how great Allen Iverson is.
One thing about Iverson is no quit in him. You just know he's got a couple of bullets left in his holster. You just know he's coming at him.
Here's Allen Iverson outside the arc. He tees up a three. It's good. He drilled it. A three by Allen Iverson. 1 minute to go in overtime. What a comeback here. The Lakers had the Sixers on the ropes. They come fighting out of the corner.
Here's Iverson. Lue, the defender, stays right with him. Allen wants to go. Wants the baseline.
He fires two ball. Got it again. He's way too good. He steps around Lue and drilled it.
Steps around Lue. He stepped over Lue, which was so disrespectful. But I saw Michael Jordan play live. I watched Kobe for his whole career. The greatest guy to put on sneakers in front of me, my eyes. It did surgery on Wilt Chamberlain, for heaven's sake. I know basketball and basketball players. But Allen Iverson, shortest guy on the court who put the fear of God in everyone on offense and defense. But Allen Iverson created himself along with his mom and had to make up for no dad in the house.
Allen Iverson was raised in Hampton, Virginia. In 1975, the newborn Allen and his 15-year-old mother, Ann, moved into his grandmother's house, located ironically on Jordan Drive. And from the moment she saw him, Ann knew her son's destiny.
In the hospital room, they bring this long, 22-inch long child whose arms pass his kneecaps. And so I said, oh my goodness, I got me a ball player.
Allen Iverson's mother's Jewish. Who knew this?
I came home one day, and my mom said, today you're going to basketball practice. And I was like, nah, I'm not going to basketball practice. I don't play basketball. I play football and baseball. And I told her I thought basketball was soft. And she said, well, your coach is on his way. He's coming to pick you up, and you're going. I cried all the way out the door.
Unbelievable. Here's his AAU coach, right? He's still in high school.
I'll never forget this. He said, I can take MJ. I said, well, we thought he meant one of the players that we'd give me to play. He said, I could take MJ, and the coaches and everybody else just in. He said, I could take Michael Jordan. I mean, he said it in a believable way that made you believe he could take Michael Jordan.
But here's the reason he's the focus of today's show, because he had to be the man of the house.
Alan had to grow up in a hurry, from growing up on the streets, from moving from apartment, to housing project, to watching his mom struggle to make ends meet, to having to take care of his younger sisters when his mom wasn't around. He was the man of the house. At age 12.
He was the man of the house, but he had all the power in the world because he knew his mom loved him and his mom took care of him.
You know, I remember one time we went on an AAU tournament when I was 13, and we didn't have no lights on in the house because she spent the money for the light bill on my sneakers. Always looked up to my mom like she was the one that told me I could be anything that I wanted to be. You know, I believed it.
He went to Bethel High School in his junior year, captain of the football team and the basketball team. He led these teams to state championships. Nobody ever did this before. And he was MVP of both basketball and football.
I think that night I was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
But
I want people to know that was the case. Not that I'm no type of bad guy.
Shockingly, Alan was convicted and sent to prison.
Mm.
He wasn't allowed to play basketball. He never played his senior year in high school. He never played football. They took something away from him that he enjoyed, that he liked.
Instead of being down on myself, I had to somehow get out of there and try to start all over. All I wanted and asked for from God was a second chance.
Well, God didn't pick up the phone, but Ann Iverson did. And she went to see legendary Georgetown coach John Thompson.
But because of the negative publicity, colleges were reluctant to recruit him. Ultimately, a desperate Ann Iverson sought out the legendary tough love coach of Georgetown University.
Ann Iverson was the reason. She's the one who pricked my curiosity. It's no way if Ann Iverson hadn't, she cried, she did indicate the fact that, you know, she was pleading for her son's life. When I sit down and talk with him, the very first thing that I realize is that he was smart. He seems to have dealt with what has happened behind him, and that was important for me. I was impressed, and when I got finished, you know, I said, hey, you know, let's go for this.
And he played his heart out for Coach Thompson. Allen Iverson, you heard that earlier soundbite, changed the world of basketball. His talent was incredible and ultimately ends up in the Basketball Hall of Fame. But he don't forget who that father figure was, who that man who saved him was. And before he starts thanking anybody else, tearfully, he thanks the father figure in his life, Coach John Thompson. Here's the beginning of Allen Iverson's speech.
Coach Thompson was saving my life. For giving me the opportunity. I was recruited by every school in the country for football and basketball. And an incident happened in high school, and all that was taken away. No other teams, no other schools or recruit me anymore. My mom went to Georgetown and begged him to give me a chance. And he did.
And he did. And the rest is history. What about in art and music? Where do we see a story where you've got to be the man of the house? Well, the musician's name is Graham Nash. Here's a tidbit of one of his songs, one of his earliest songs from 1966 with the Hollies.
every day she's there, I say, please share my umbrella. Bus stop, bus go, she stays, love grows under my umbrella. All that summer we enjoyed it, wind and rain and shine. That umbrella we employed it by August.
This song was actually written by Graham Goldman. Ironically, Graham's father was a writer as well. And Graham came home one day and said, I have an idea for a song about a bus stop where this guy sees this beautiful girl and just lusts after her. And Graham's father wrote the beginning of the song for him. The lyric is, bus stop, wet day, she's there, I say, please share my umbrella. A father and a son collaborating on a song that made Graham Nash and the Hollies crack the charts and become a number one hit. The story of Graham Nash is also interesting in regards to a father figure. Listen to Alan Clark talk about how he and Graham Nash grew up in England.
The house that we were in was a two up and two down with outside toilet. Can you imagine that?
See, you have to explain the way that Graham and I used to live, which was in a tenement houses, you know, back to front, with a yard at the back. The toilet was outside, you know, so if you wanted to go to the loo in the middle of the night, you had to get out of bed and go outside, whether it was snowing, raining, or whatever.
Graham Nash and his dad, early years, a beautiful relationship.
Though free time was scarce and money tight, William Nash did get to indulge his love of photography on Sundays. He would take pictures of family outings and then rush back to develop them in the dark room he had set up in Graham's bedroom.
At 10 years old, he turned me on to the magic of seeing an image appear from a blank piece of paper in a colorless liquid and, wait there, son, hold on. Dad, there's nothing happening. What's going on? Wait. Dad. And then all of a sudden, this elephant or giraffe that he'd taken a picture of at the zoo came into being, and I've never forgotten that moment.
But Graham Nash's dad couldn't afford a brand new camera, so he bought a used one. Turns out the camera he bought for a cheap price was from a guy who stole it. And then the police showed up in the house one day and said, where'd you get that camera? And it meant he had a rat on his friend who sold it to him. And he wasn't going to do that. This rocked. Talk about rock and roll. This rocked the world of Graham Nash.
He said that a camera that my father had bought from a friend of his at work had been stolen, and that they wanted to know what the name of my father's friend was. And in the north of England, and I'm pretty sure it's the same all over the world, you just don't grass on your friends. You don't tell the police anything, right? And to make a long story short, for a $20 camera, my father went to jail for a year.
And now he and Allen Iverson have the same life, because now he's a teenager. He's in high school, and there's no father at home. There's no man making a living, and everything goes in shambles, so he's quitting school to go to work.
The family was stunned and financially strapped, so Graham quit school to go to work.
I think because his father was in prison and he was put in the role of caretaker, and that's what he does, and he's a caretaker. And I think that's a real core of who he is, a real essence.
It is the essence, and we're the beneficiaries, because probably this led to his creativity. But still, I'm sure he wishes he had his dad back.
William Nash was released from a prison after a year, a broken man. Neither his pride, health, ever recovered from his time in jail. He died several years after his release at the age of 46, still embarrassed at the humiliation he had caused his family.
And that's one of the pains that my father went through, that you know, how his decision not to tell on his friend that ended up having him go to jail for a year, how it affected his wife, my mother, and how it affected me and my sister Elaine. You know, how it affected us. You know, people looking at us, people going, you know, well, you know, the father's in jail, you know, all that kind of stuff. Deep psychological scars, which I've tried all my life to ignore, and I've realized lately that I can't ignore them.
Instead of breaking Allen Iverson, instead of breaking Graham Nash, What do they say about pressure? It either busts pipes or it makes diamonds. Graham Nash became a diamond for all of us.
His father's death made Graham even more determined to escape the life that South would offer. In 1962, he and Alan joined forces with three other musicians and began touring the north of England as the Hollies. The band played cover songs by early rock and roll groups like the Coasters and the Searchers. They would often cross paths with Liverpool lads who called themselves the Beatles. The Beatles and the Hollies would be at the forefront of a movement that became known as the British Beat.
Remember this, weekend warriors. Life is not about finding yourself. It's about creating yourself. Allen Iverson created himself. Graham Nash created himself. And their Father's Day is a particularly special one because they know they did it with father figures, not necessarily the father. That's the inspiration of the alternate Father's Day, which we're celebrating today here on the Weekend Warrior Show. Coming up next, I'm going to take your calls. The clinic will be open. We'll do some clapper vision with the Weekend Warrior as well as the Warrior, Rich Hill. I'll give you a hint. Explaining his elbow has a lot to do with the axle and shock absorber and spring in your car. I'll explain more. The number is 877-710-ESPN. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on ESPN LA 710. To my father's eyes. I love you, Steve Paulette. Eric Clapton's very special to me. I listen to him 3 days a week in the operating room. The poor nurses and techs and staff have to listen to it, but his voice, the way he plays the guitar, it does something to the alpha waves in the operating room and allow me to get through some of the more complicated surgeries that come my way. 30 years it's been like that. It's funny. They print out surgeons' preference cards so they know the instruments to pull for you for each of the different, the shoulder surgery, the hip surgery, the different knee surgeries that I do. And at the top it says, this is his gown size, extra large, because I'm fat, size of my gloves. And then it says, surgeon loves music, especially Eric Clapton. Then it lists scalpels, this, that, all the rest of the tools for the particular case. But yeah, he's a big part of it. All right, let's take some calls. The number is 877-710-ESPN, and we'll do Rich Hill a little bit later in his Clapper Vision. Let's go to Norman in Pacific Palisades. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Good morning, Dr. Clapper.
Good morning, Norman from Pacific Palisades. What do you do for a living?
I'm retired.
What did you do?
Well, I was in the Navy, and I worked for the Navy. Wow. And I actually worked on developing phases of the jet engines.
Wow.
So it was a very interesting time
wow.
for me.
A jet engine. It is so different than a propeller plane. It's amazing. It just compresses the air and shoots it out of the back. But you got to worry if a bird flies in front of it because there goes the jet engine, right?
True. Absolutely.
Unbelievable. I grew up right near JFK Airport, and let me tell you, Jamaica Bay had tons of geese that would come down from Canada, and it was really something. You'd hear this rocket go off because they'd be shooting to scare the birds away from being near the runway. Because it's devastating if that happens. That's fascinating. Why the Navy? How come you, did the Navy pick you or you picked the Navy?
Well, the Navy sent me to school.
Oh,
first,
wow.
First of all, the Navy sent me to school, and then I went in the Navy, and eventually got out of the Navy, went back to school, and after I got out of school again, I went to work for the Navy.
Have you been all over the world?
Yes, I have, actually.
What's
yes,
the
I've been in the Atlantic and the Pacific, all over the Pacific. I served in the Pacific in the very early Vietnam era.
Wow.
Did a lot of training cruises in the Atlantic.
You're 83 years old. Where's the prettiest place that Norman has ever seen in his life?
Two places come to mind.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the when I was in the Navy, Barcelona. That really moved me terrifically.
Really? Barcelona? Wow. That's like saying Compton.
Well, maybe...
Not that there's anything wrong with Compton.
Maybe today, but back then, that was in the early 50s when I went on my training cruises to Barcelona. It was a beautiful place.
Is it a natural harbor?
You know, what I recall of it was just the structure and the architecture of the city.
Wow.
And at that time, they had these nighttime or evening concerts out in the... concerts, and it was just a marvelous environment.
You know, there was an architect there named Gaudi, G-A-U-D-I, and he's the guy who's the vision, if you will, behind the beauty that is Barcelona. But I don't know if you'd say that nowadays if you went to go see it, but that's amazing. Good for you. Listen, it's your opinion. You're allowed to say whatever you want. All right, how can I help you? What'd you do to yourself?
Well, okay, it's my left knee, and it's been bothering me for a number of years, actually, off and on. Mm-hmm. And I did go to see an orthopedic knee specialist several years ago, 3 or 4 years ago. And he couldn't see anything wrong with it. I took x-rays of it, but it has become worse.
Mm-hmm.
And what I noticed on it's my left knee, and there's something that moves around in there.
So sometimes... the fragment of cartilage that breaks off will float inside the knee. But guess what? Cartilage, either from your meniscus or from the end of the bone, doesn't have calcium in it. So you go take an x-ray and something's floating in the joint, you ain't going to see it because it doesn't show up on an x-ray, Norman. It shows up on an MRI. Right? So if you look at that ocean and you're on the boat, you're in the Navy, and you look around and someone says to you, do you see any fish swimming around? You're going to say, I don't see any fish. Well, then you're going to take out your ultrasound machine and you're going to find a torpedo and a fish and everything else you want to find because you, with your eyes, can't see what's below the surface because it doesn't show up on that wavelength, but the ultrasound can see it, and that's how you can find the fish in the torpedoes. The same thing is true when that dummy looked at your x-ray and said there's nothing the matter with you. That's because he's looking at the ocean, but he don't have an ultrasound. You need an MRI, because trust me, I trust you more than I do the guy you saw, because something is the matter. Do not let them give you pills or cortisone shots or any needles inside your knee. Forget about it. You first need, Norman, a diagnosis. So I want you to tell whoever that you got a second opinion from Dr. Clapper, and you make those bums give you an MRI of your knee. And then I'm giving you permission to call here, and I will translate your MRI with some Clapper vision.
Is it an MRI or an ultrasound? Or
no, no, no. The ultrasound is kind of a poor man's way of looking. And you get an MRI. You worked hard your whole life. You served this country beautifully your entire career. You're entitled to get an MRI, and you don't need one with dye injected, which is painful. You just need a regular MRI. Get it done, and then you call here.
Thank you so much, Dr. Clapper.
Norman, I want you to do me a favor. Find a total stranger today. Do something nice for them. That's how you'll be thanking me, and I'm looking forward to helping you. You get the MRI, then you call back.
Thank you so much.
All right. God bless you. All right. Let's take another call, Steve. All right. We just did a knee. Let's do another body part. Let's go to Trenton, Altadena. Altadena. You know there is a fantastic ice cream place there called Bulgarini. Have you been there?
Yes, indeed, sir. I've taken a couple of children that I look after them.
Oh, my God. And in the summertime, on that white blank wall next to Bulgarini, they play movies at night in the summertime. Have you done that?
Yes, and they also, now the owner is proud enough to say he does a massive table experience. So you sit with complete strangers and you break open some...
the pistachio gelato that guy makes is the greatest pistachio ice cream. And let me tell you, sugar and cinnamon, peanut butter and jelly, you put chocolate, dark chocolate with pistachio gelato, and you combine them, 1 + 1 = 7. It's on your your tongue jumps out of your mouth. It's so delicious. The best gelato in L.A. is in your neighborhood in Altadena at Bulgarini. Good job, Trent. All right, how can I help you?
That'll work. Yes, I'm calling with regard to my girlfriend. She's 33 years old.
Okay.
She, in her younger life, she did two very amazing thing. She was a borderline Olympic ice skater hopeful.
Wow.
So she was capable of things like a double lutz, you know, a couple triple axels, things like that.
Wow.
And also she water skied semi-professionally. Hmm. So that's how I first laid eyes on her, flashing across Lake Arrowhead at about 80 miles an hour.
Wow.
A year ago, she looked after children, and she reached, I was with her that day, she reached into the trunk of a car to pull out a bocce ball set, and she just crumpled. And I felt badly afterwards because, I mean, she couldn't even get up the steps into our apartment. It took an hour and a half to get her there. And she basically went to a into a fetal position. And it's been a year, and it kind of comes and goes, and we've tried all kinds of things.
Has she had an MRI?
She has had an MRI.
And what does it say?
A displacement of the one of the lower discs, I believe, at the L3 or something, and a bulging. So I've tried core training with her.
Yeah.
I've tried to, I mean, because she's very adverse to any kind of medication. And I, in a strange way, I agree with that because I think it just masks.
Correct. It does. She needs a diagnosis. Listen, what do you do for a living?
For my sins, I'm an actor.
Okay. Then I can't really give you a great acting analogy except to say this. When you try to go into a role and you need to cry, for example, the way Robert De Niro and Dustin Hoffman talk about it is, or Paul Newman, that you got to go back into your own life and find something tragic and all of a sudden the tears will come, right? I mean, you've got to get there some way, say, hey, you can't just flip a switch. You have to be able to make yourself cry because of some tragedy in your own life. To some extent...
Well, with respect, you try not to rape your own memories, but you try to have empathy for...
Correct, yeah. But you need something real and versus something that's fake. You can't just make tears come. It has to come from reality. And in that respect, the real world in medicine is the bone, the disc. You need, if you, God forbid, have this gigantic disc material, and she's young. She's 33 years old, so it's not a dried-out structure like it would be. I'm 62 years old.
And a lot of the problem is that, because a lot of people say, well, you're young, you're beautiful.
Yeah, well, let me tell you something. That's a juicy disc. It's not a bone spur. You're dealing with stuff that can absolutely get into the wrong spot, and it's like someone punched her in the eye and busted her lens in her eye. I mean, if mechanically something is that... This is a girl who's not a complainer, who's now doubled over in pain. It's not enough to just say, oh, you have a little bit of a disc. I appreciate her wanting to be holistic, but she's robbing herself of her life to not have it worked up properly. And having someone we trust evaluate her spine is missing out. I agree with you. Don't just take cortisone shots or pills for it. Structurally, it needs to be evaluated again. She needs the old MRI compared with a new one to see what the status of her spine is. You live in Altadena. There are beautiful spine experts there, but if you need someone's name at Cedars, I'll give it to you right now. You get on the phone and you call Pat Johnson or Lionel Hunt or Robert Pashman. I mean, I can give you names of all kinds of people that I think are excellent diagnosticians. Not just anybody. You really have to be in the right hands. This is just a few names I can give you. But you love her. Clearly you do. That's why you're calling. The best thing you can do is say, I called Dr. Clapper, and he said it's time for a new MRI to get this figured out. That's what needs to be done. I'm not giving you treatment options. I have no idea what the diagnosis is because it could have changed since that first study. So that's what you need to do, Trent. Okay.
I'm much obliged to you, and I really appreciate your time, and I love your show.
Thank you very much, Trent. I appreciate it. I do it for people like you, and that's the reason I get up every Saturday after doing six surgeries yesterday, Steve Paulette. All right, let's take a break, and thank you so much, Trent, for the kind words. Appreciate it. We'll pay some bills. Coming back, I'll take your calls, and we're going to talk about the Dodgers, Rich Hill, and what's going on with an elbow. That's a forearm strain in his elbow. What are the two have to do with each other? in an elbow that already had the Tommy John surgery ways back. We'll get into it with some clapper vision. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors Show here on ESPN LA 710. Don't you love these guys? We adopted this band, Ayaterra, and they're just doing so great. In the summer, they're going to do 4 sites in Hawaii. 4 different islands. Nick Laporcio let me know. They're doing so well. They've been in studio here twice. We started listening to them years ago. I just love it. All right, let me tell you a little bit about Rich Hill, and then I'm going to take your calls. So Rich Hill is, you saw him, he's on the disabled list now because of a pain and discomfort, he calls it, in his forearm. They're calling it a forearm muscle strain. What does that have to do with your elbow? This is the beauty of how our body works. So there is a muscle group called the flexor digitorum superficialis. If you go palms up right now with your hand, and I want you to feel the front of your forearm, the little finger, your pinky side of your forearm, versus the thumb side of your forearm. Well, the pinky side of your forearm is the ulnar side of your forearm, and the muscle that's right below the skin is the muscle that goes to your 4 fingers. So your index, your long, your ring, and your little finger. And this muscle belly is in your forearm, but then it becomes 4 different tendons that cross the wrist that go into your hand that allow you to flex your fingers. At the big knuckle joint, the MCP joint, and at the PIP joint, the first knuckle that you have. Not to where your fingernails are, not all the way out. But it flexes the big knuckle, the MCP joint, where your fingers meet your palm, the base of your fingers, and that first joint where your ring is, for example. But here's what's interesting. The flexor digitorum superficialis, the main muscle that lets you do this, which, by the way, the muscle works better with your wrists slightly extended, like holding a bottle of Corona or a can of Coke. That makes this muscle work better, which is exactly what you need to do when you hold a baseball. And you're not just throwing a ball, but with control. That's what's key here as a baseball pitcher. So that fine-tuning holding of the baseball, it's critical. The flexor digitorum, flexor means flex, digitorum is fingers, digit in Latin, superficialis. So it's the first one, superficial, underneath the skin. But here's what's fascinating about it. It not only originates and anchors off the bone of the little finger side of your elbow, but it also has a portion of it that anchors not from bone up above at the elbow, but from the ligament as well, the ulnar collateral ligament, which is the ligament that stabilizes your elbow joint that is the focus of the Tommy John surgery. So that ligament, that canvas-like material that keeps the hinge motion of your elbow intact, is being tugged on slightly by the origin of this muscle. So if there's a strain at that ligament, you're going to actually feel it in your muscle. Here's a clapper vision. If you're in your car, which many of you are right now listening to the show, and you're about to go over a lovely Los Angeles freeway pothole, all right, you have your tire, your wheel, anchored to a horizontal bar called an axle, okay? It's a static structure. You can bust it in half, your axle, which I did in Ireland in a rent-a-car, but that's a whole nother story. But you go through the pothole. If it's a significant pothole, you got to worry. You could break your axle, which I did in a car. But that gives you this rigid, that's the key word, stability to the wheels attached to the car, the axle. But you also know that when you hit that pothole, that what allows you to get through that bump is the elasticity, not rigid, the opposite of rigid, but the bendable, the elasticity of the spring, of the shock absorber. You don't just have a red wagon with a rigid axle and four wheels. The little wagon that a kid has doesn't have a shock absorber or springs in it. It just has a rigid axle. But your car has elasticity. It has the spring, and it has the shock to absorb that pothole. That's exactly what's going on. That's the clapper vision. You help stabilize your elbow by clinching that ball, by flexing that muscle, which actually anchors in a flexible way and stabilizes your elbow joint from opening up with an elasticity, because the muscles can contract and relax. But deeper is the axle, the rigid stabilizer, which is the ulnar collateral ligament, which is that tears in a baseball pitcher. You have to have a Tommy John surgery. So in essence, his body is telling him he's straining the shock absorber, the spring. That's why the muscle hurts. This is a red light. You better shut it down, which they're going to do for a few weeks, because you don't want the strain to go deeper and stretch out the axle, the rigid stabilizer, which is the ulnar collateral ligament. So they are hand in hand related. He's hurt the spring shock absorber. We don't need him to hurt the axle itself. And that's Rich Hill, and there's a clapper vision for you. So platelet-rich plasma, which they injected, is a kind of a crazy glue that's going to try and help glue the muscle and give it more security. We'll see if it works, though. Let's hope. We'll pray for him. All right, we can take a call. All right, let's get to the lines. Let's go to a different body part. Let's go to Angelina in Newport Beach. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Hi, Dr. Clapper.
How are you, Angelina?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
Good. You listen to the show?
I do, and so does my husband every Saturday morning.
I love it. God bless you. What do you do for a living?
I am in 401k plan administration.
Oh, thank you. That's very helpful. People need to do that. We need to save better as a society. Thank
Me
you for
too.
Educating everybody. All right, how can I help you? Where'd you grow up, by the way?
I actually grew up in the Inland Empire, so in Riverside area, California.
So you live in the dream, because you live in Newport Beach and you came from Riverside.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm loving it. All right, good for you. God bless. All right, what happened?
Thank you, you too. Okay, so I don't know what I did. I left shoulder, front part of the shoulder. I can move it, but I can't. If I go to reach to my left hand to my right shoulder,
yep.
Extreme pain in my front left shoulder. If I'm sitting down in my bed and I try to put my hands back to lift myself up, horrible pain in my left front shoulder.
How do you stay in shape? You go to the gym, you do yoga, what do you do?
Yoga, running.
How long has this been going on?
This has been going on for about 6 months now.
Did you have a new trainer, a new exercise, anything change?
Nothing has changed. Nope.
Okay. The only thing that's changed is that you're 41 and you used to be 21.
Exactly.
At Cedars, we call it altacocaritis, basically. Welcome to old age. But you're not old. Yeah. You're 41. But things start to change. And this is a classic location and complaint for either bicipital tendonitis, calcific tendonitis in the rotator cuff, a labral tear. These are the things that are in the differential diagnosis list, the things that can cause it. You always want to be holistic and not run to the operating room. I get it. And I hate cortisone shots, and I hate people sticking needles into people. Don't let them do that to you. But I don't want you to just take a pill to mask the problem. Most likely getting you on the right track with how to change the way you exercise and maybe cheat a little bit with ultrasound or electrical stimulation with a physical therapist. But I ain't sending you to therapy until I know what the hell's the matter with you. So you do not need a painful dye injection. Don't let them do that to you. But a straightforward MRI, an x-ray is not enough. You need to see what the hell you did, and they need to get you one. And if it's still confusing, then you need to call here, and I'll explain what's the matter with Clapper Vision. But okay. You have a pretty classic location for one of those things, biceps tendon, the labrum, or the rotator cuff. And there are really cool things you can do to avoid surgery. And you'll really hit this two ways. You're going to delete the bad things that you're doing and increase the good things. And this is ultimately what's going to get you better. Surgery is the last thing that I'd be thinking about right now. But key is information. Just like you sit down with your clients, the first thing you say is, how much money do you make? How much can you save? What are your liabilities? What are your assets? Just the same way I'm deputizing you as an orthopedic surgeon right now, you get to treat your shoulder the same way you would walk into a room and meet a new client in terms of how there's no difference. So don't let the doctor make you feel stupid. Don't let them make you feel intimidated. You're a smart person, and your intelligence can absolutely help guide you, just like you're doing a 401k for a brand new client. But you need the information first. Get the MRI, and don't let those bums say that you can't have one, that they have new rule. We live in Russia now. We don't live in America anymore. They right away want to send you to therapy before they would even let you get an MRI. You that's tell them exactly. You got a second opinion from Dr. Clapper and give them hell.
I will. All right. I appreciate it.
All right, Angelina, you call me back if it's still confusing once you get that study. And thanks so much. I want you to do me a favor. Find a total stranger today. Do something nice for them. That's how you'll be thanking me.
Will do. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
You too. God bless. All right. We'll take a break. We'll pay some bills. Stay on the line. The number is 877-710-ESPN. Did I have a Philly cheesesteak? I bought 40 sandwiches yesterday for the whole operating room because I'm back from Africa. And I got the Philly cheesesteak from my favorite place in L.A. for the melt-in-your-mouth cheesesteak that he brings the bread in from South Philly. Ah, so good. I'll tell you where that is. Coming up next on the Weekend Warriors Show here on ESPN LA 710. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. Ray Charles. What's the name of the song, Steve? I don't need no doctor. Well, you need a doctor. Everybody needs a doctor. But you need a good doctor. Listen, I'm giving a shout out to the great coach Dave Miller because 8.5 years ago, he and I started the Weekend Warriors Show thanks to the great Mike Thompson. And all these years later, I'm still here. I haven't grown any new hair, but I'm still here. And nobody knows basketball better than the great coach Dave Miller. But it's important to mention him because it is the Father's Day show. And he's one of the great fathers that I've ever met, taking care of his family's two sons and his daughter. So there's a shout out to you, Coach Dave Miller. I wouldn't be here without you and I starting this a long, long time ago. All right, I got about a minute left, so let's go to another body part. Let's go to Jason in Pasadena. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Hey, Doc.
Hi. How are you, Jason? Hey. What do you do for a living?
I'm a dentist.
All right. I love it.
Yeah.
You working on Saturdays?
Sometimes.
All right.
I'm not working today, though.
All right. How can I help you?
So normally on Saturdays, I'm a runner. I like running. About 8 months ago or so, I fell trail running, and I think what they've called
did
it.
They, like did you get an MRI?
I have.
So this is what I want you to do. You call back at 7:15 next week, and I'm going to give you the answers.
Okay.
Because I got to scoot. All right. Thanks so much for listening. Warriors, I'll see you on the radio.